So in terms of, say, the basic person on the street that was coming into science with sort of very limited knowledge, how would you define what a biofuel is?
Well, of course, the term generally refers to two types of material. The most common type is woody biomass or woody materials that are generally just burned directly for heat. And then the other type are gases or liquids, such as biogas or ethanol, biodiesel, that are made from biomaterials. So actually, I think it's one of the difficulties of discussing the area is that there's many types of biofuels, and there's many different ways to produce them. So there's a vigorous public discourse about biofuels, but actually much of it is not very correct in some way, because the discourse tries to treat it as though it's a single subject, but actually there's many different subjects. For example, there's many ways to produce ethanol. Some are environmentally positive, some may be environmentally negative. And so inevitably in these discussions, what happens is one side of the argument picks one scenario and the other side picks another scenario, and they end up talking past each other.
Well, that's an interesting point. So, and one of the questions that we've got down is, what is the biggest misconception about biofuel production or usage?
The kinds of issues that are, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about, is like the net energy return. Some types of biofuels, I think, don't have a positive net energy return. That is, the amount of energy it takes to grow and process the material to a fuel. But certainly other types of biofuels look to us like they're very net energy positive. And so similarly, the same things are true for greenhouse gas emissions. I think there are some types of so-called biofuels that could be very negative for greenhouse gas emissions, partially through very, you know, kind of indirect effects. That is, you know, if you grow biofuels on a drained swamp in Malaysia, that's going to be very negative, because as soon as you drain a swamp, the greenhouse gas emissions out of that swamp will dwarf the rate at which the plants that you plant can possibly take up the CO2 for a century or more. And I think there's also a sense that there's not enough land for food production, which is really strongly wrong. There's a tremendous amount of land. We use 12% of the land worldwide, roughly, for food production.
And what percentage do we currently use for biofuels?
Oh, it's a tiny fraction. It doesn't show up as it's like 0.00-something percent.
So I guess there's a sort of scope to increase significantly if people think that's a reasonable thing to do.
Yeah, let me give you an example where I think the public discourse is not very clear on the matter. So in Brazil, the Brazilians now get about 40% of their transportation fuels by fermenting sugars from sugarcane. And the amount of acreage required to do that is about 4 million hectares. Now, that may seem like a lot if you're living in Great Britain, but to put it in perspective, there's 234 million hectares used to grow cattle, with about 1.4 cows per hectare, so way below the carrying capacity of the land. So the Brazilian government has calculated that with a small intensification of the cattle, they could free up 57 million hectares for sugarcane production. So from the 4 that's currently used for fuels, 4 are used for food as well, so 4 for food, 4 for fuel. If they expanded it to 57 million hectares and used both the cellulosic material as well as the sugar, our estimate is that could produce almost a third of the fuel in the world with the transportation fuel. So that's just in one country. So when we look at how much is possible worldwide, it certainly seems to us like quite a large amount. Around the world, there's 1 billion acres that's been abandoned to agriculture. And this is all land that at one time did grow crops.
And I guess always the argument that some of the land that is being used for biofuel could be used for food production.
Yes, and that's certainly true. But of course, you must be aware that in the last two generations, the major problem in food production has been overproduction in the developed world. So we pay farmers mostly not to produce. The numbers for the subsidies in Europe and North America to keep farming out of production is I believe it's in the more than $100 billion a year. And in Africa, the average crop yields about one-third of what it does in the developed world because of lack of investment. We live in a world economy now where I think we're going to have to use the regions of the world that do have abundant land to provide the food and fuel.
What crops, in your view, have the greatest potential for acting as biofuels?
Yeah, we're particularly interested in perennial species that can be used to produce, you know, large amounts of total biomass in a sustainable way with net energy and greenhouse gas benefits. So the best species, because of their high water use efficiency, are a type of grasses like miscanthus and switchgrass. So we're certainly investing in those, but we're We're also we're very interested in even more water-efficient plants, types of species called agaves. They're kind of a cactus-like material. Some agaves have higher sugar content than sugarcane. And there's many species. So in Africa, agave sisalana has been grown on millions of hectares to produce sisal, which is used for rope. Some of these species have 10 times the water use efficiency of a plant like wheat or rice, meaning that for one unit of water input, they can produce 10 times more dry biomass than a plant like wheat or rice. And they're very, very drought hardy. So we're interested in those for the semi-arid areas. You know, there's a couple of billion acres worldwide that's too arid for agriculture, but might be quite suitable for these kinds of highly water-efficient, drought-hardy species.
What's the biggest take-home message about the potential benefits of biofuels compared to use of fossil fuels?
Oh, well, obviously they're sustainable, and they, if done right, they can be they can have a net positive greenhouse gas effect, I think. We can dramatically reduce the amount of greenhouse gas emissions associated with producing fuels by doing it right. You know, if you track the discoveries of new oil fields, they're relatively infrequent since there's been a major find. And there's every reason to believe that it will eventually run out. It's probably, in the case of oil and gas, in the 50 to 60 year time frame. Let me give you a number that's easy to understand to see what the challenge is. World energy use is currently expanding by about 1 billion watts, or so-called gigawatt, every 1.6 days. That's so, you know, I guess everybody knows what a watt is from a light bulb. So think of a, 100-watt light bulb. Well, a billion watts is the size of a large nuclear power plant. One way of thinking about it is that energy use is expanding worldwide by about the output of one nuclear power plant every 1.6 days. So, as an American, a profligate energy user, United States uses 25% of world energy. My view is we need to get our country in order first. We've got to get a grip on our own energy production. We've got to clean it up and get energy efficient. And then hopefully some of the technologies that we develop to accomplish that, they'll become available to other countries. And hopefully those countries will feel the same imperative eventually to become energy efficient and put in place all the renewable systems.
So if I had to put you on the spot and give you a statement, just to see whether you would go along with it, so would you say that the future was biofuels? And if not, what is it?
Oh, no, I don't believe in a single future. I think biofuels can make a component. You know, I believe we could get 30% of our transportation fuels from biomass. So it maybe in 25 years, roughly 6% of our energy use might come from biofuels. Long run, we'll probably see some improvements in solar technologies, maybe solar thermal, maybe some improvements in photovoltaic manufacturing, and hopefully some big improvements in photoelectric chemistry. But they're pretty far away. I hope we'll see more geothermal. Wind, of course, is ready. I think we need to see a lot of wind. One of the challenges will be to also develop better storage. So I hope we'll see some battery improvements that would allow us to, store energy better.
So I'm picking up that biofuels is part of the answer, and the answer itself is quite complicated. It's a whole combination of different things working together.
Yes, it's a combination of things. We need to use every renewable technology we possibly can to make change. Many students ask me how they can work on bioenergy. And while it's certainly possible, there's many ways to work on plants in that context. I actually think it's important to remember that ultimately, the land that we need to produce biofuels, there's a finite supply, and everything we can possibly do to improve agriculture will contribute ultimately to biofuels as well as the larger context of, human well-being. We need many other things besides energy. We need materials and, fibers and fuels and feed. And so I would say almost anything that anybody can do to improve plant productivity in a sustainable paradigm will contribute ultimately to the energy climate matter.